Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. It is the 26th and nearly the end of September. I can't believe that. I don't know about you, but regardless of whether at the beginning of September or the end of September, what is true every day of September is that the tomb is empty and we serve the living King of the only kingdom that knows no end. And we celebrate that fact every morning here on Faith Radio Mornings, where we talk about the important news and topics of the day with trusted voices from around our country. They may have different angles from which they're coming, but it's all going to be from a Christian perspective. And we'll do the best we can to ferret out these news topics with honesty and with faith and with the real hope that comes from the fact that that tomb is empty. So I hope that you're grabbing your coffee this morning, heading off to work, getting the kids or dragging them out of bed right now, whatever's in front of you, that this hope can be part of you, the way you start your day. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Rausch. And Rachel Sutton also will be in studio later this morning. And they do such a great job of running the sound and the board, just keeping everything flowing smoothly for you as listeners. And, of course, Paul Perreault in the newsroom, you know his voice. He does a lot of the weather here locally and just brings great news and topics to mind. So, of course, we appreciate you joining the program as well. Love it when you call in, when you text into the studio. And you can do that at any point in the morning. If you've got something you'd like to respond to or a question you'd like to ask or something for clarification, go ahead and call or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Well, as we set up our first hour of the show, really excited to be joined by a new voice for Faith Radio Mornings, Harvest Prude, who is a journalist for World Magazine, and she has been closely covering the Judge Kavanaugh Supreme Court confirmation hearings. I was talking with Harvest just a few moments ago, and she was on site for the 4 days a few weeks ago when they started the confirmation process, and what a circus that was, and is going to be, of course, following things very closely over the next week or so as we start tomorrow with the hearings in which we'll hear from the accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, of sexual abuse that she said Judge Kavanaugh perpetrated upon her many years ago. And of course, we'll also hear from Judge Kavanaugh this week and possibly even see some votes come to play on whether or not he will be the next Supreme Court justice. So really excited to have the perspective of Harvest Prude here, first half of our hour on this show. And then after the bottom of our hour break, Dr. Kent Kaiser will join me. He's a regular guest. I know you know his voice on Wednesday mornings, and he's the chair of communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Going to get into a few topics, including the development of a new Republican demographic, perhaps, as Latino voters are increasingly supporting President Trump, at least according to the statistics that have recently emerged. And we'll also talk about Chelsea Clinton's continued arguments and public support for abortion. So lots to get to in the news this morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. But before going there, let's just take a pause for a minute and go back to the quote we've been circling around all week here on Faith Radio Mornings, and came from Charles Spurgeon, the noted theologian and pastor, who was talking about anxiety in his day, something that I think many of us struggle in our day. And Spurgeon said this: "Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It only empties today of its strength. Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but only empties today of its strength." So as we do the news and the topics of the day, remember that we can do so from a place of peace and hope, and we'll do just that with Harvest Prude next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes after the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by Harvest Prude, who is a journalist that writes often for World Magazine and has been on site in Washington, D.C., covering closely the hearings related to Judge Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court confirmation process. Good morning, Harvest.
Good morning. So good to be here.
Yeah, delightful to have you. I know you've been there, and we were talking a little bit off air about what a circus it must have been. What was it, maybe 10 days ago or so now, when they began these hearings, and what you saw from both the Democratic and Republican side? What was it like to actually be in the courtroom? And it must have been a bit surreal.
It really was. It was just marked with bitter partisan wrangling from the start, and also with noisy protests, as I'm sure you're aware. They arrested, 70 plus protesters that first day. So just sitting there, the senators are trying to get through the hearing, and we just have these periodic interruptions, with just kind of screaming people. So that was really surreal to see, like you were saying. And another quick note is that it was just one hearing, but it was 4 days long, and that started like September 4th. So it
Yeah,
was a marathon hearing, yeah.
it really was. It was incredible to watch on TV, and we couldn't get really a sense of it maybe on TV. Were the protesters already seated in the courtroom? Did they come in during the hearings? Like, how did that go? Because we would hear that regular shouting out, as you mentioned, at least from TV.
Yeah, so what they would do is they would kind of file people in. There was a long line that would just kind of shift forward. So whenever somebody would interrupt the hearing, they would be escorted out by Capitol Hill police, and new people would be allowed to take their place, whether they were there in support of Judge Brett Kavanaugh or, to protest his nomination.
Yeah, well, it was fascinating to watch what was going on in the hearing room. And I'm curious now, as we move forward and look to tomorrow, it's obviously going to be a pretty big day in the process in which we're going to hear testimony from both sides, both the accuser and the judge. What is your sense in terms of the senators? Are they still undecided, any of them at this point, on either the Democratic or Republican side? Does this hearing really going to matter to shape their opinion?
Right. Yes. For some senators, for a few undecided ones, it will be significant. The majority of the senators, they're kind of responding as expected. It's all about, partisan politics, and most of them have already had their mind made up even before the nomination was announced. But for a few, it really is going to turn on the hearing. So undecided senators to watch are mostly Republicans from blue states who don't want to alienate their base. So Senators Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins from Maine, retiring Senator Jeff Flake from Arizona, and Bob Corker from Tennessee. They've sort of shown signs that they're still open-minded, they're still trying to make their decision. And so for them, it really will be about optics, about how Christine Blasey Ford and Kavanaugh come across in the hearing, and how people respond to that.
Well, and it looks like, at least from what I've seen this week, that Senator Corker and Senator Flake have signaled at least some measure of support, as well as Susan Collins, maybe either direction. Murkowski came out yesterday and suggested that maybe we should have some full FBI hearings. But even if the Republican side loses her vote, it would still have 50 votes, and the tie would be broken by Vice President Pence. Do I have that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So Pence could break a tie if only one sort of deflects, but they do have a razor-thin 51 to 49 majority. So if, more than one deflects, then the nomination, really is in trouble.
And I saw that last night, the Republicans announced that they're not actually going to be the ones to do most of the questioning, that they hired an outside legal counsel. Rachel Mitchell is her name, who has a history of prosecuting sex crimes and talking with people that have been victims of sexual abuse. Is this about optics, do you think, Harvest? Is this about just trying to avoid the idea that there's going to be 11 white men questioning Christine Blasey Ford? What is the process here?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think lawmakers are really trying to handle the situation in a way that is sensitive to the seriousness of it, and they're hesitant to, come across like they might be railroading Ford. So I think hiring outside legal counsel, and especially a female legal counselor, is really going to help them maintain that image. So there has been some pushback from Ford's attorneys on this. They're saying that having someone other than the senators question Ford may make it come across too much like it's a criminal trial, which it's not. But I do think the reason they're doing this is just to make sure an expert is handling this, that it's being handled well. So I'm hopeful that that part of it will turn out in favor of the way the hearing goes.
We're talking with Harvest Prude, who is a journalist for World Magazine and has been on site for the past couple of weeks covering the the hearing room drama that is part of Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation process. And Harvest, I'd be curious your thoughts, too, in terms of what is the sense of things in Washington? I know that from a news standpoint, when we're removed from it, we kind of sort of say we need to hear from the accuser, or, you know, maybe we shouldn't try to smear the reputation of a judge with uncorroborated testimony. So what's the momentum in Washington? Is it towards sort of more the Me Too movement? Is it towards just like, wow, this is really political rancor at its worst?
That's a great question. I think something to just that's very present here covering it is that the story is changing almost by the minute. Ever since the hearing, we've had three different allegations come out over the last couple weeks. We've had the Senate Judiciary Committee vote pushed back, the hearing rescheduled several times. So I think everyone is just really trying to make sure they have as much information as possible, and that they're being fair and sensitive to both parties as much as possible, especially on the lawmaker side. I mean, there obviously has been some people, you know, that some people have made up their mind and they're just kind of sticking to their partisan base. And that's where I think you see a lot of, you know, some rancor come out. But I think lawmakers really are trying to handle the situation well and seriously. I think it's also important to note that, you know, Kavanaugh himself hasn't said that Ford is lying. He just thinks it's a case of mistaken identity. So something to look for Thursday and, you know, in the coming days is for Republican lawmakers especially to latch onto this and say, you know, both parties are trying to tell the truth to the best of their ability. So, yeah.
There's definitely a lot to consider in this process, especially moving forward with some of the midterms coming up. And maybe let's talk about that when we come back from break, Harvest, is regardless of how this plays out, what impact do we see on the midterm elections where the Democrats, did they lose their credibility? Did they gain credibility? Did the Republicans kind of play in this razor's edge well enough where they didn't want to lose the support of women? It's going to be really interesting. So more with Harvest Pruitt from World Magazine next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by Harvest Pruitt, who's a journalist for World Magazine and has been giving us an inside look at the hearing room drama around the Judge Kavanaugh proceedings. Harvest, before getting back to that conversation, there is breaking news that we should probably attend to, and that is that Dunkin' is dropping the donuts from its name. It says Dunkin' is dropping donuts. Yeah, beginning in January, Dunkin' Donuts will simply be known as Dunkin' as it tries to rebrand itself as a beverage. Beverage-led company. I mean, Harvest, this is breaking news at its best.
I mean, honestly, I have been, you know, kind of tense and waiting for bombshell news all week. But I have to say, I never expected it would come from Dunkin' Donuts.
You tweeted about this last night, did you not?
I did. I was, you know, trying to keep up with the Kavanaugh hearings. And then I saw that and I just had to pause everything and share my thoughts about that. So.
I love it. Critical information that we can only find here from you and Faith Radio Mornings. I love it.
That's right.
So, well, there's still, you know, more to get into. I think we could consider relative to the hearing room proceedings and what's going on in the confirmation process. And it sure seems like this is as much about the confirmation process now. And it really is, because obviously the court is going to be swayed conservatively for many generations. But this also has implications, I would guess, for the 2018 midterms coming up here in November. What are you hearing in Washington, D.C. about what is getting set up relative to those elections?
I mean, you're absolutely right. The confirmation hearing process and everything that's gone down really has been overshadowed by midterms. Midterms are 40 days away. They're weighing really heavily on this. I mean, both parties are trying to fire up their base and either take over or hold on to the House and Senate. And so both are, you know, kind of reacting to this situation and using this situation in a way that they think will benefit them. So the way Democrats are responding, particularly is, you know, to their credit for their base. You know, they're trying to paint this in a way that will fire up women and, you know, just kind of build their, you know, their paint Washington blue movement. And Republicans are hoping to confirm him, you know, this month, which will be to their credit within their base. But now that the allegations have thrown a wrench into what was, you know, a practically sure confirmation, they're trying to do their best to come across as not railroading Ford or alienating women from, you know, prior to midterms. And so I think, you know, that's why they hired, you know, the outside legal counsel, and they're just trying to, you know, be fair and sensitive.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of that. And do you get the sense that this whole thing that the Democrats have done, is it helpful to the hashtag Me Too movement? Has it become too political? And of course, this has been in the headlines for quite a while now, including the Bill Cosby news that came out yesterday that he was convicted and that he was sentenced to at least 3 years. So there's been this movement going on for quite some time that has been really, I think, justifiable and understandable about the way women have been treated. Is this helping the cause in your sense, or is this maybe setting that cause back a little bit?
That's a great question. I'm not an expert on the Me Too movement in any sense. But I mean, it is important to note that these kinds of allegations have extended across the aisle in the past and have impacted, you know, everywhere from, like you said, Hollywood to within the Senate. And so because of that, I think lawmakers, you know, the climate of the cultural moment is that lawmakers are really trying to take this seriously, which I think is a good thing. And yeah, just handling it in a way that is sensitive to the seriousness of it, because, you know, in the future, if something like this happens, everyone wants to be able to point back to the past and say, you know, we were trying to handle it well. We were trying to be fair and sensitive to both parties. And we were hesitant to dismiss, you know, anyone, which I think is to their credit.
Well, it's fascinating to watch for sure, and love to get your perspective again after the events of the Supreme Court and what we see happen in the next week or two. Love to transition the conversation in our last couple minutes here to some of the other news coming out of Washington, and that is we see the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, being accused maybe of working behind the scenes to suggest that we could invoke the 25th Amendment and impeach the president. That's some news that came out that from 2017, where he was caught on a private tape saying such things. And now apparently he's coming to the White House on Thursday, same day as these hearings, as tomorrow. And just wondering what your take is on that. Do we see that he's going to continue in his job? Is this the start of a wider purge that President Trump is going to try to do? How are you processing this?
Right. Yes. There's a lot happening Thursday for sure. I think with Rosenstein being under scrutiny, the thing to keep in mind is that it is very much an individual to individual basis. Like when these kind of allegations or, you know, these kinds of stories break, that is something that the White House is going to pay very close attention to. So I think his position currently is tenuous, but we've seen signs that it could go both ways, with him resigning or the president firing him, or, you know, maybe they have a good conversation Thursday and he keeps his position. So in terms of like a rippling effect that this might have, I don't think it will have just a blanket rippling effect. I think it will really have to depend on, you know, if another individual situation like this happens where someone has said something, that will be, you know, attended to, but I'm hesitant to say that, you know, it's just going to have a purge effect, I guess.
And so in our last minute together, too, on this, obviously he has oversight over the Robert Mueller investigation. And we haven't seen so much of that in the news lately, obviously overshadowed by all the Supreme Court hearings. Would it have implications maybe for the Mueller investigation if Rosenstein was fired?
Great question. That's really something I want to say that's just above my payroll in that question. You know, some say, oh, it might affect the Mueller probe. Some say it will make it harder for the president to do anything there. Some say it will make it easier. At this point, it's really just speculation about what the president, you know, will or won't do, or what will or won't happen. So, I mean, I'm certainly going to be watching with bated breath to see, yeah, what happens.
No, we certainly appreciate your perspective coming directly from Washington, D.C., having been in the hearing rooms and seeing what's there. And I don't know if you're going to shift your donut eating sort of process, if you're going to become more of a beverage connoisseur from Dunkin', or if you continue with the donuts in the morning harvest.
You know, I'm always a coffee person, so I don't think Dunkin's going to lose my business.
Oh, I love it. Thanks so much for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings and giving us that inside perspective. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We'll take a short break for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And in the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Kent Kaiser, and we'll talk a bit about Chelsea Clinton's ongoing support and advocacy for abortion. So lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Appreciated that conversation with Harvest Fruit of World Magazine as she's there on site at the hearings, and we'll look forward to chatting with her again as the hearings come to their conclusion. We did reference that there was news coming out yesterday that Bill Cosby could be 90 years old before he's a free man. The legendary comedian, once known as America's Dad, was sentenced yesterday to 3 to 10 years in state prison. The 81-year-old Cosby was sentenced in suburban Philadelphia courtroom for drugging and sexually assaulting former Temple University athletics staffer Andrea Constant at his home in 2004. A difficult, troubling news coming out of what was somebody who was a hero, certainly for many of us growing up, and the fall from grace has been profound. More to come with Kent Kaiser here, chair of communications department at Northwestern. We'll talk about that and more issues on Faith Radio Mornings. Dr. Bruce Ashford was on the program yesterday here on Faith Radio Mornings, and he was chatting with us about appealing to those who haven't joined a church community.
You know, God made us for community. And I mean, if you're a Christian, you're out there in radio land and you love the Lord and you're not involved in church right now for whatever reason, churches have disappointed you. Of course they have. There's disappointing people in churches. All of us are disappointing. Let me encourage you to get back involved in church somewhere. God kind of throws us into the middle of churches, surrounded by people that we might never hang out with otherwise, that are different from us. They have different opinions, they're different ages, maybe different races. But it's exactly in that kind of community that God begins to work on our life and shape us and make us who he needs us to be. And it's exactly that community that can support us in times of suffering and personal anguish.
Really appreciate Bruce's perspective on so many issues in our country. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com. Search for the podcast from yesterday by date, or you can go to Bruce Ashford and you'll catch all of what Bruce had to share with us yesterday. Well, I'm sitting across the studio from Dr. Ken Kaiser, my regular Wednesday morning guest, and we're going to cover a lot of different ground, including the Bill Cosby sentencing, a little bit about Dunkin' Donuts, Chelsea Clinton. Lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings.
It is unlikely that the term evangelical, as it has been known, will survive. This is Jim Garlow. With the rejection by some evangelicals of traditional marriage, the acceptance of homosexuality, the championing of abortion as an option, the term evangelical now has a number of meanings. I suggest the acronym ABC, Authentically Biblical Christians, or Authentically Biblical Churches. That's to differentiate the ABCs from the CINOs, C-I-N-O, the Christians in name only, and the INOs, E-I-N-O, evangelicals in name only. This is a precarious moment, but it could be the church's greatest moment if there is a return to the acceptance of the scriptures and core biblical truth. 1 Timothy 4:16 is a reminder to pay close attention to yourself and to your teaching. Find more about this precarious moment at jimgarlow.com.
And those, of course, are the Dr. Kent Kaiser bagpipes that signal his arrival in studio as he joins me each Wednesday morning to talk about various news headlines of the morning. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
So I'm curious your take on this as a communications professor, this take on the changing of the name from Dunkin' Donuts just to Dunkin' as they try to rebrand themselves as more of a beverage company.
Well, I think it's a dumb move. I've always thought that changing the brand, once you've got a brand established, I mean, that's what people recognize, and I think it's dumb to change it. I can remember when Pizza Hut trying to change to The Hut, and you kind of get it, like, from the perspective of somebody who works there, they probably, in their colloquial everyday life, call it The Hut, and then they think, oh, wouldn't that be cool if we just changed it? But it's not. I mean, then you lose your identity, in a sense. I've seen it happen with various nonprofit organizations. I know there used to be one organization here in the Twin Cities that had Lutheran in the name, and it was for youth, and they thought that, gee, if they would remove the word Lutheran, then it would become more, open to others or more appealing to others. And what happened was that it lost its identity, and people who had been supportive stopped supporting, and so it actually, kind of went down the tubes, really. And I think it's the same thing with companies. Once you've got a brand established, you should keep it.
Yeah, it is tricky. I don't remember ever a time going to Pizza Hut for the salad bar.
Yeah, well, no. And you can understand if they had a weird name. You know, if there's been certain companies. I mean, you know, Electrosol is one that people might recognize from the past, which like created soap for or something for in the kitchen. And they've changed to Finish or something like that, which you can understand. Electrosol sounds kind of odd, but it was a major, major rebranding effort when they changed that name. And, I think I understand where Dunkin' Donuts wants to go after the coffee market because the margins on coffee's got to be just, you know, many, many times greater than the margin on donuts. But people have been buying coffee at Dunkin' Donuts for years. And, I mean, they put up new stores, and it seems like that's why. It's for the coffee, not so much for the donuts.
Yeah, interesting to watch. Pretty big change culturally, obviously, with that one. Well, lots to get to in the headlines. And I don't know if you saw yesterday that the official sentencing of America's father, Bill Cosby, who incredible fall from grace in this, and he's going to be in prison from anywhere between 3 to 10 years, past the age of 90, potentially. What was your take on this?
Well, isn't it interesting how long this has taken? It took like 3 years for this to play out. And, the guy's old. But, you know, it's pretty clear that he was guilty and just one of the worst sexual predators, it seems, that we know of from Hollywood and probably just, you know, seeing the very surface of the problems in Hollywood. And, you know, it's unfortunate for everybody involved. I mean, it's unfortunate this American icon is, you know, no longer. I mean, now you look at his show or you see him in the old ads or something like that, and it just, like, gives you the creeps.
It does.
And, you know, so that's unfortunate. But, you know, all of us were sort of, well, all of us were fooled, right?
Yeah. It is tricky. We watched almost all of the Cosby Show seasons with my oldest kids, and now I look at my youngest through, and we probably won't watch through those seasons, which is unfortunate. They were wonderful episodes. But to your point, it's hard to watch them without being tainted these days. So lots more to get to. Obviously, this was the Cosby news. It was, squarely in line with what's happening in the Kavanaugh proceedings as well, as we've been in this sort of 3 to 5 year cycle as a country, I think rightly ordered in identifying that women have been treated so poorly over the past 10, 20, 30, 40, you could say hundreds of years, actually, if you really look through history. What is your take on what's happening in the Kavanaugh proceedings in Washington?
Well, here I think it's on the other hand, a little warped. I mean, it seems like there really isn't any evidence. And it's just sort of he said, she said kind of a scenario, unfortunately. And, of course, we're looking at things that supposedly took place when they were teenagers. And it doesn't sound like there was – to me, it doesn't seem like it was more than kind of activity that you might expect from roughhousing kids or, you know, whatever. But it, you know, and the fact that it comes out at this particular point is really suspicious, and the way the Democrats have handled it is very unfortunate. I mean, if they were serious about this issue, it would have come out right away, it seems to me. But here we are. Now, I don't know that, you know, I'm not sure what I think of, you know, the confirmation of Kavanaugh. He's the most unpopular Supreme Court nominee who is still in the running for being put on the Supreme Court. Those who have been so unpopular in the past, people can think like Harriet Myers, for example, Robert Bork, they eventually were forced to, in the past, they've either been forced to take themselves out of the running or they have been voted down. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. It seems like Mitch McConnell, leader of the Senate, is finally saying, we're going to hold a vote probably, it sounds now like early next week. And I have a suspicion that he's going to come through these hearings, like especially tomorrow when Kavanaugh and his accuser go before the Senate. I have this feeling that McConnell is going to come out of that and say, okay, I either have the votes or I don't have the votes, and we're just going to either go for it or we're going to ask Kavanaugh to pull himself out of the running, because there is still time. If Kavanaugh were to pull himself out, there's still time for President Trump to nominate somebody else and for that person to be confirmed before the new Congress comes into session. Now, we're 42 days away from the election, or 41 or whatever it is, and we're still like 99 days away from the new Congress coming in. So there's that lame duck session between when the election takes place and when the new Congress comes in. And the longest it's taken to confirm a Supreme Court nominee in recent memory was Clarence Thomas, and that was 100 days. So there's still enough time. And most of them, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, took only 50 days.
Yeah.
So most of them are much less than 100 days. So if the president were to nominate somebody else, say Amy Coney Barrett, who was apparently at the top of the list before, we would supposedly, you know, be able to get her through. And I think that McConnell would be able to get her through in that short time. And he wasn't a fan of, again, he wasn't a fan of Kavanaugh in the first place. And so, you know, I bet he's sitting there going, you know, let's see what happens tomorrow. And, you know, if I don't have the votes, I'm just going to see if the guy will pull himself out of it. Yeah. Otherwise, they'll vote. And if he gets voted down, same scenario. President Trump nominates somebody else. And Amy Barrett is, you know, potentially more conservative on the issues that matter to us as Christians. And she'd probably be able to get through easier. Certainly, you're not going to have these same kind of allegations against her as we do against Kavanaugh.
Well, and I think it's fascinating, too, because, you know, Bill Cosby goes to jail. And I think partly we could sympathize as a country with the accusers because there was so many with the same pattern. But there also wasn't this underpinning of an agenda maybe against Bill Cosby. These were just seem like legitimate stories. On this one, it's harder to process, it seems, because the woman making the accusation is very much a Democratic agenda activist. And you see that Dianne Feinstein has sat on the accusations for 3 months. So even if the accusations are true, and they might be, they really might, it's tougher to process when it's so politicized like this.
Right. And even that. So I'm torn because on the one hand, I'd really just want to get Kavanaugh confirmed and, you know, kind of stick it to the Democrats in a way for this, these shenanigans and the kerfuffle they've created. But on the other hand, you know, he is so unpopular that I liked Amy Coney Barrett going into this whole process a lot better anyway. So I'm sort of conflicted because on the other hand, I think a better scenario actually might be for in the long run for Republicans and for the Supreme Court might be for Kavanaugh to either pull out or be rejected by the Senate. And then we put in Amy Coney Barrett, you know, but I think that that's the way a lot of conservatives feel at this moment. I mean, if we were to go backward, like if we were to be able to go back in time, I think a lot of people would really push much more hard for Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah, I agree. About 46 minutes past the hour here, we're talking with Dr. Ken Kaiser. Ken, when we come back, we'll address some of the conversation that's been coming from Chelsea Clinton in her ongoing support of Roe versus Wade. And of course, that's one of the heated issues and maybe where the most energy lies among the Democratic Party to derail the confirmation process is worry about overturning Roe versus Wade. So we'll get into that conversation next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined in studio by a regular contributor to the program, Dr. Ken Kaiser, who is a chair of communications department here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We talk about the news each week. And Ken, before the break, we referenced Chelsea Clinton has been in the news a few different times in the past 6 weeks or so, touting the sort of the public benefits of abortion for our country, starting with an economic argument that she made recently that the fact that we've instituted abortion in our country, it's allowed for the entrance of women into the workforce in unprecedented numbers, and that's added $3.5 trillion to our economy, was her argument. And she came out yesterday and suggested that to not support abortion would be unchristian. If you were against abortion, it would be an unchristian kind of idea. So talk us through what's happening in her thinking.
Right. Well, I mean, her argument is that if, you know, abortion were illegal or women weren't able to access abortions legally, then more women would die or be maimed because they would be seeking these sort of back alley abortions or going to other countries for abortions or whatever. And she said her quote was, she said, "That's unconscionable to me. And also, and I'm not sure this will unleash another wave of hate in my direction, but as a deeply religious person, it's also unchristian to me." So it's interesting how she couched that, because she's like saying, "Oh, if you disagree with me, then you're a hater." Well, no. Like, if you hate abortion, you know, you hate abortion. You don't hate Chelsea Clinton. I mean, you know, she's wrong-headed, and it's a very strange perspective to think that it would be Christian to kill babies. But that's essentially what she's saying.
Yeah, and it sure seems like maybe if, the way the trends are going and the science over the last 30, 40 years that allow us to see life in the womb at 16, 17, 18 weeks, viability has been backed up for maybe 30 weeks down to 20 weeks and 18. It seems like there just might be, Christian or not, that there tends to be more sympathy towards the idea of protecting the unborn just simply because of the science of it.
No, I remember back when I was in school in the 80s and that was about the time when we started to recognize that there wasn't just some mass of cells. And it was interesting to see how that shifted how the whole whole argument shifted in that period, where now people will admit that that's a life in there. You know, at about that time, that's when it shifted. It wasn't before that. People just didn't think of it as a life. But the more you can see the ultrasound, the more you can understand that there's a human growing in there. And you know, you see the billboards around the country, and they give these little statistics about when the baby has a heartbeat, when the baby has this, that. My understanding is the most compelling argument is when the baby has fingerprints. Which is interesting, more so than heartbeat, because people recognize fingerprints as individuality. And, you know, when you recognize that there's an actual individual in there, not just even life, but beyond life, it's an actual individual, then that's a pretty compelling argument for the pro-life side.
Yeah, it really is. And so to suggest even, let's say, third trimester abortion, which has been part of the deal in our country, but you see premature babies emerge from the womb at 7 months or even 6 months, and they're every bit the baby that, and they might be smaller and need different kind of neonatal care, but they're every bit the baby as a 9-month full-term baby. It is going to be, I think, a very hard argument in the future for our country.
Yeah, I think that's right. No, it's interesting. I recently saw, you know, I was in a conversation where one of our friends who's a doctor, and not necessarily conservative at all, but a doctor who tends to come down on the pro-life side versus a feminist who does not. But she had to admit that there was, just for this very argument, she did have to admit that she was very uncomfortable with late-term abortions. But she was still for them.
Right.
I mean, this is the crazy thing. But at least you have this recognition now, even among the most radical pro-abortion people, that there is a life in there, because it did at least make her uncomfortable. She wasn't against it still. She wasn't against it. But this doctor clearly was, and he was trying to get her to, trying to push her to, like, exactly when would you be opposed, or when do you become uncomfortable? She was very, of course, nebulous in her answer, but
yeah, it's gonna be
at least she had recognized that it was a life in there.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to watch. Certainly the conversations will shift, and we're seeing some of the blurring of the lines demographically in terms of traditionally who votes for who and on which side of it. And traditionally, obviously, if you're pro-abortion, you're Democrat. If you're anti, you're Republican. But those lines are blurring a little bit, and we're seeing similar blurring across the Latino population in our country, that at least some of the narrative is out there that there's no way the Latino vote could ever be for Trump, given his supposed anti-immigration policy, the desire to build a wall. And yet we're seeing the growth of Latino support of the president.
Well, a little bit, but what's even more interesting is that we don't see Latino votes being mobilized against Republicans or against the president. It seems that they kind of fall down on the side of sort of like independents now rather than as Democrats, which is a step in the right direction. And when you put up a Republican Latino candidate, then obviously that changes the mix quite a bit. But yeah, what's interesting is, like, in these midterm elections, the expectation is that Latino voters are likely to stay home and not vote, which, so obviously they're not being motivated by the Democrats' rhetoric that's anti-Trump and supposedly pro-Latino. I mean, so they don't care for the Democrats either.
Right.
So that's what's interesting. They're like independents. They don't necessarily like the president, but they definitely don't like the Democrats either. So there's an opportunity there, I would say, for future Republicans to grab those votes.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch, too. I mean, with the president in the news yesterday, we see even other shifts maybe in the Republican way of doing their party moving forward, is that obviously the candidates in the primaries that have supported President Trump have made it through the primaries to the ballot box most often. And we saw the president yesterday at the United Nations advocating for a patriotism and a nationalism for the United States of America. They want to have good allies that work with them, but his America First agenda was on display, as opposed to what he described being unelected bureaucrats who are sort of ruling the world from someplace in Europe together. And so it is interesting to watch how the Republican Party is even shifting into more of a patriotic kind of party.
Well, yeah, and I think that a lot of people are just becoming aware now of how bad the United Nations has been for the United States. I mean, going back again to even to the Reagan era, and when Jean Kirkpatrick, she was a Democrat in that Republican administration, but she was our ambassador to the UN. And she complained back then about how dysfunctional the United Nations was, and how it was basically just this place for all the countries of the world to beat up on the United States. And it's continued to this day. And it's only now, I think, with the president himself actually complaining about it, that it's become evident to people exactly how bad the United Nations is. I mean, it's stacked against the United States. It's stacked against Israel and our closest allies. And And when you have like members of the Security Council that include like Russia and China and countries like Syria, I mean, it's just a kind of a joke. And so I think finally people are wisening up to exactly how bad the United Nations is for us.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch. Love having you on the program, Ken Kaiser. I know a listener wrote in here this morning and said, I love when Kent is on. One of my favorite times of the Faith Radio mornings always brings the, and get this, Kent, smart, rational, common sense point of view. So you can take that with you today, that you are smart and rational and common sense. I know Logan Rausch, our producer, interacted with you as a student and stuff, and he says the same thing. And that's why you bring him gifts every morning here on Faith Radio.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Great to have you in the program. We'll take a break. And we'll wrap up the first hour of our show. A great first hour of the show. Harvest Prue joining us from World Journalism. She's a journalist for World Magazine, and she was right in the inside of the courtroom there, or the hearing room, I should say, of the confirmation process of Judge Kavanaugh. And, of course, Ken Kaiser. I know so many of you as listeners appreciate his perspective. Other news to get to here before the top of the hour break is that tomorrow night's NFL game between the Minnesota Vikings and the Los Angeles Rams will make history no matter what happens on the field. In the midst of this sort of Me Too movement and the elevation of women in some justifiable and understandable ways in our culture, we see that tomorrow night will be the first NFL telecast to feature two women as the primary broadcasters. Veteran journalists Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer will cover the game for Amazon Prime. It's going to be fascinating to watch tomorrow night. We in Minnesota do not have any more hope for our Minnesota Vikings, so there will be other reasons to watch. Well, I see that Bill English is already in studio, and we'll have our BibleInBusiness.com segment next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.